This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Welcome to Blakey's Boot Room, the number one Cardiff City podcast, brought to you by Wales Online.
Hello and welcome to Blakey's Boot Room, the Cardiff City podcast by Wales Online, brought to you in association with Giovanni's Restaurants. I'm Ben James, I'm joined by Nathan Blake as always and Paul Abandonato. How we doing, gentlemen?
All good, Benjamin, all good. Love the shirt, mate. Wish we had it recorded.
That's the perils of podcasting. You can't see this shit.
Yeah, we'll all be changing, hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll start filming soon and that jazzy little number.
It'll be Glenn back in with his quite boring wardrobe, shall we say. We got plenty to talk about today. We got the South Wales Derby, obviously Carlisle last night in the Cup.
Yeah.
It's January, so we got transfers, but I think before we get onto all that, we want to pay tribute to a sort of two bluebirds who unfortunately passed away recently, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Alan, I can't.
Alan Harrington and Chris Barker.
Yeah, I can't speak a lot about Alan Harrington because, you know, all you do is go on internet and find stats. So I never seen him play or anything like that. But blueblood legend, seen Barks play. Such a young man as well. Surprising news.
Yeah.
And very, very sad news because I just remember him as being quite a bubbly kind of character. So to hear the news last week that he had passed was you know, tragic, really, really sad. So best wishes to both and their families, condolences to both gentlemen. But sad news, really sad.
There was a nice touch ahead of the Swansea game where there was a minute's applause.
Yeah.
And I've got to say, I thought the Swansea fans were hugely respectful during that because as it was being announced, there was silence in the ground. And, you know, these things can turn nasty, yeah, right? But they were magnificent. They were quiet through the announcement. And then the vast majority of them, I was looking across, joined in the minute's applause.
Yeah, they did.
And it just shows that dignity and decency can triumph, you know, even amidst the passion and emotion of a Welsh derby. What do you think, Blakey?
No, I thought they were fantastic, to be honest with you. I like you, Paul. I sat and, you know, Geraint Ads is the stadium announcer now, and, you know, and I did notice he was raising his voice, but there was no need. He was anticipating, I think, like all of us were, the worst. But as Paul said, there was silence while Geraint was talking, and then a fantastic round of applause by everybody, most of the Swansea fans included. So, big respects.
Because we've touched upon Swansea there now. Let's review the sort of game because, you know, it's the week after a South Wales derby. No real bragging rights went to anyone this time, but what do we make of it?
Well, they've got slight bragging rights over us because they got 4 points out of the six.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the game, I thought Cardiff played well. I thought as games go, I think Cardiff, you know, bossed most of that game. I would say the second half was slightly in Cardiff's favour, but the first half I thought was largely in Cardiff's favour. Swansea had the best chance with hitting the post in the first half. Cardiff hit the bar second half, but like I just said to little Cliffy, don't hit the target, don't score. Simple as that. So, you know, don't get nothing for an ooh in this game, as they say. Don't hit the target, don't score. 0-0. I thought probably favoured Swansea more than Cardiff. I thought Cardiff deserved the win. But both teams lacking in the final third, that cutting edge, that bit, something a bit special you need to break a deadlock like that. I thought neither team had that cutting edge to be able to go on and win that game significantly. And I was surprised, I tell you what, I was really surprised that I was driving home, I got my car, and we had to wait for the buses to leave and what have you. I heard the Swansea manager's comments about how they dominated the game, the crowd dominated the stadium. And I just thought to myself, I don't get where you're coming from with that. It was either a smokescreen, right? Because, even the BBC commentators, one Swansea, one Cardiff, both boys were in agreement, Rob Phillips in agreement, that, you know, Cardiff had largely dominated the game. So I was surprised at the comments from the Swansea manager. But, hey, it's opinions. We all see the game differently, don't we?
Yeah, we certainly do. Guess that leads us nicely on to Paul. How did you see the game?
I thought it was nip and tuck, to be honest with you. Swansea certainly didn't dominate, if that's what Steve Cooper was saying. I thought it was nip and tuck, and a draw was probably a fair result. Both hit the woodwork. Both. It wasn't the outside of the woodwork. It was like, you know, the inside of the post in Salinas' case and the underside of the bar in Patterson's case. Both of those could have gone in with rebounds, but didn't. I thought, you know, Cardiff's lack of, apart from Tomlin's, Cardiff's lack of a cutting edge in the final third has been apparent all season, and that was there again today. I think Swansea have got talent in those areas, particularly with Ayew, and Brewster's come with a big reputation. But I thought Cardiff defended them superbly. I thought Sean Morrison was outstanding, had his best game of the season.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Blakey disagrees, but we had a conversation after the game. I thought Joe Bennett was outstanding. I thought he completely nullified the Andre Ayew threat. Blakey, we had a disagreement on that
after the game, which is fair enough. I thought Morrison was fantastic.
Yeah, so I thought Cardiff's defence played really well to nullify any Swansea threat, to be honest with you. I thought they looked a little bit slicker, faster as a team. But again, we know that Cardiff lacked pace.
Absolutely,
but
yeah.
Cardiff possessed more of the power. I guess we knew it was going to be that way. What I did think, Ben, was I just noticed, particularly in the last 20 minutes, and this is what the Cardiff-Swansea game does. It's a unique occasion in every sense, right? The passion, the emotion, the everything that goes with it. But I noticed in the last 20 minutes there was tension from both sets of fans, particularly when there were set pieces in and around the opposition box. Yep. You could sense the Cardiff fans panicking when Swansea had a corner or they had a couple of free kicks in dangerous areas. And you could sense the Swansea fans panicking when Cardiff were threatening in those areas as well. Neither side wanted to lose that game.
No, absolutely.
Like desperate.
Absolutely.
That's what the derby does. It just brought a tension and an apprehension, and that's what makes the game so great. The football wasn't brilliant, but to me the occasion was brilliant, as it always is.
Yeah,
you know,
I thought the fans were fantastic. I really did. I thought the atmosphere in the stadium, I haven't felt that for quite some time. You'd have to probably go to a Welsh game to emulate that kind of atmosphere. I thought it was really, really special. I didn't, like Paul says, I didn't think the game was special, but I do think Cardiff edged it overall. I mean, I was an advocate for Brewster to come to Cardiff a season or two ago, but he just snatched everything. The occasion got to him, clearly. You know what I mean? It was probably too much.
Yeah.
I would have said if Cooper was thinking again, he would probably bring him on a sub, because I thought it was too much for him in the game. And I thought Sean Morrison's tackle on him right in the first minute.
I think
30 seconds. It's like,
welcome to the championship.
Welcome to the derby.
Did Brewster get a yellow card shortly after that?
Slight tackle over the other side. So
probably still in his head at that point. Isn't
it? Yeah, that he got bullied. And at one point, it was the ball had bounced in the air. And I think it was Morrison, or one of the lads in midfield, might have been Packard. I think it was Morrison shoulder charged him off the ball, And then he come from like round the back of Morris, and he was like a 4-year-old, like attacking his dad. Like, he's like trying to push, he's trying to shoulder charge Morrison. Morrison didn't move. Oh, I was up with Glenn Laugh. I was like, we were just like laughing, like, oh, look at him, he's only small. Big Morrison bullying him again. But no, it was a good game. I enjoyed the whole occasion, I have to say, and the fact that there's so much. Just be fair, hatred and passion, but never spilled over into anything stupid. I thought that was commendable. Yeah,
I mean, a lot of the headlines and a lot of the talk after the game was a couple of sort of Swansea or ex-Swansea players who happened to be in the way, and then obviously Ollie McBurney. I think Joe Rodon was there. It's Ollie McBurney who sort of made the headlines, isn't it, with some of his actions. He's escaped an FA charge. But what did you make of
I'll be honest with you, I don't do social media, so I haven't seen it yet. I was with one of my young players last night. We were chatting, and he told me about it. And I said, it's a bit of nonsense. I don't follow all that nonsense. Do you know what I mean? I ain't got time for that. But if you're asking my opinion on what do I think of, I said, what did he do? And he said, he was making gestures towards the Cardiff fans. And I just think, like, it's a bit immature, isn't it? Let's be fair. You should have a bit more common sense than that. You know, if you want to go to the game, it's dangerous enough being in the crowd. I would say try and get yourself in an executive box, because if something does kick off, God forbid, you don't want to be in amongst that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Especially when you're outnumbered probably 10-1 by Cardiff fans. You definitely don't want to be in amongst that. So, you know, players, you know, get yourself out of there, because you're not fans, you're professionals. You're supposed to be, you know, at a point where, you know, you're involved in that. You play for the club, or you played for the club, but then, listen, it's his choice if he wants to go along as a fan and watch the game in the away end. But then involving yourself, like, with gestures, it's like, oh, come on, man. You know, I mean, I've scored goals or played against Swansea fans and like, after you run to them or you whatever. But standing in behind the goal is a different kettle of fish. I just think, yeah, it's been blown up a bit out of proportion, but I think if the derby comes round again at Cardiff City Stadium and Ollie wanted to be at the game, I think if he was in the away end, I think he probably won't be throwing up hand signs anytime soon. doesn't really bode well for him. But you know, you realize as a player, you that hatred, that passion from the fans runs through you. You know?
Yeah.
But then as you grow up and you retire, Ben, you become old like me. It subsides, like, you know what I mean. The passion comes on derby day for the game, still for me. And then, yeah, after that, you know, Swansea fans wanted to say something to me, I just blanked them, as long as it didn't get like racial or anything like that. You just, yeah, whatever, mate. So I think it's you got to kind of recognise that and got to try and separate yourself. And I know it's difficult because I've been there. So it's try and separate yourself from that, though. But hopefully going forward in future, Ollie makes a different and better decision.
Paul, you must have some views on this.
I thought that Burnley acted like an idiot in terms of his gestures. Listen, I don't have an issue with players going to stand with the fans. I as long as it's very occasional, which that one was clearly. You know, in a way, it brings them close to the fans.
It's dangerous, though.
No, I know that.
Like Cliffy was saying, if there was some sort of fan surge or something like that, and it's easy to slip on a step and do your knee or anything like that. I know people might go, oh, you know, that's a bit far-fetched, Blakes. But, you know, far-fetched things happen every day, don't they? Freak accidents, you know what I mean? You see them every day. A tree fell down on a car. You know what I mean? You don't leave the house expecting the tree to fall on your car that day. But freak accidents happen. And I think you're in a situation where it's more likely to happen then because of the anger, because of the angst between the two sets of fans. So you are leaving yourself open to anything, really and truly. Whatever happens, happens. Let's say, like, Cardiff fans had run and jumped in the Swansea end and, you know, these things, I would say went through a period where it kind of subsided, not between Cardiff and Swansea, but seeing, like, fans getting it on with one another. But we're in that kind of space where these things seem to be bubbling under the surface again. So, just be careful, be mindful. The last thing you want to do is snap your cruciate or break your ankle on a curb or something like that in the middle of a surge or some sort of, you know, riot or kickoff or something like that. I just wouldn't put myself in harm's way like that.
So I didn't really have an issue with the principle of it where Bernie's actions, he just acted like an oik. He's, you know, as a professional footballer, you've got to be above that. And if I was Sheffield United, I wouldn't look too kindly upon that. And word is that they're not looking too kindly on it. And clearly the FA have intervened to remind him of his responsibilities and so on. Where I probably disagree with Blakey is, we've had a chat before all this. I can sort of kind of understand Joe Roden being in there because he plays for the club and you know, he's clearly a member of the club. But Blakey makes a very good point that, look, you know, initially we were told in the press that Dan James was in there. And I thought, if Dan James is in there, that's a serious error of judgment. You know, he's a Wales international, well-respected Wales international. Cardiff have the biggest proportion of Wales fans, you know, that go and watch the team. You know, that would be a big error of judgment. Now, fortunately, that was wrong. We were given wrong duff information and that Dan James wasn't there. Joe Roden is a Wales international. You could argue, well, you know, given the facts I've just mentioned there, should he have been there? I don't really have an issue with that because he plays for the club, you know, and, you know, he's a member of that club. But so what, you do, Nath, don't
so,
you?
So,
you know?
So I just look at the safety aspect.
Yeah.
That's, you know, same goes for Joe. I mean, can you imagine Joe's being tipped for, you know, being
Man U, you know,
the Euro squad and, you know, big player for Wales in 2020.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if something went wrong or something, you know, and I mean, like I say, something, freak accidents happen every day, anytime.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm a skydiver, I'm more open to the chance of my parachute not opening and me crashing to the ground. Hence why I don't do those things like jump out of planes and bungee jump, because to me, you're increasing your risk. Do you know what I mean? I don't surf, and I definitely wouldn't surf in South Africa, because you increase your risk of shark eating you. You know, there are things that happen. You increase the risk. All I'm saying is that at this point, and it might have been easier thinking about it, for them to go in with the fans than to come in through the reception and sit in the director's box or executive box. But I would say at least there you're watching the game how you want to watch it, and you've got some security around you. Do you understand what I mean? So, you know, I don't, maybe it was requested and Cardiff said no, maybe it was never, the question was never asked, we don't know. But I would say, just from a safety perspective for the boys, you know, just.
But you also think feel as a Wales international, Joe shouldn't have been in there.
No,
you?
Because as well, I think, you know, if you're sat in the stadium and in an executive box, you don't lend yourself to the fans. Sort of, you're there to watch the game.
Yeah.
Isn't it? You know, you might hate inside, but no one's seeing that. No one's, you know. And if you're then going to go and play for Wales, and as Paul says, which, you know, majority of fans come here are Cardiff fans, you know, you're leaving yourself open, wide open. I remember the Cardiff fans used to give Cookie, Chrissy Coleman, stick. You know, they probably didn't love Cookie until he qualified for the European Championships, right? Because Cardiff fans used to give him a lot of stick when we used to play at, like, the Millennium Stadium and stuff like that. But I just say to him, listen, it's what off a duck. You know what I mean? We played down Swansea, like, I think there was a couple of thousand there in a testimonial for Bobby Smith. They absolutely hammered me. Absolutely hammered me. And that was a Welsh game for one of their coaches. So, you know, I just paid them back by tearing up their team. Simple as that. No? But no, I would look to put him in a box, mate.
Yeah, I'm really glad that initial thing we were told about Dan James being there wasn't the case, because that would have been a serious error of judgment, I feel. And you know.
Yeah. It's just, you know, there's more to it than Cardiff Swansea.
I mean, the irony is that Joe Roden will be playing on that pitch many times for Wales.
30,000, not largely, Cardiff fans there.
Cheering him on, one presumes, or, yeah, you know.
A large proportion of them.
Yeah.
So you don't want to alienate that, do you, at the end of the day? But he's got a right to go and watch the game and sit amongst the fans. Yeah. Like I said, I just think you just be careful with the safety issue. You know, simple as that.
I think for me, the only thing is McBurney making the gestures. That's the only thing I don't condone. The rest of it, I'm fine with. I think it's great if you've got people like...
I don't know where your mind goes for that.
McBurney and Roden sort of being in the way, and that's great.
I don't know where your mind would go to go to that point where you actually... Maybe, I don't know, maybe he's weak-minded. Maybe just got carried along with the flow of things because the two sets of fans are bantering all the time. Do you know what I mean?
I've got to say, man, I mean, John the Beast Parkin was with the fans at a cup. Obviously, he's finished now, hasn't he? There's the difference, right? But he was with the Cardiff fans at a game. I think it was Derby away.
Was he working that game, or was that the reason?
Forgive me if I've got it wrong, but he was with the away fans. And he just acted completely dignified throughout. You know, he had a wonderful ovation, reception. The fans were singing.
I mean,
you know. Well, you're a player. You're a fan of the club, and you're a fan of. I'm a fan of the club, but I'm a player, and you know that's different. You know, the fans. You have a great relationship with the fans, right? But you're a fan, but in a different. You're not one of the ones who gets on the bus every Saturday morning and travel 6 hours to games or 3 hours to games or, you know, overnight into Europe and all that when I was playing at Cardiff. You know, I'm not one of those guys. I'm the person that they come in to see. Right? I'm the entertainer. Mm. I'm not the person who goes out singing and gesturing to the opposition. That's not my job. My job is to beat the opposition on the pitch. And then whatever you guys do off the pitch, crack on.
So I
agree with you, Ben. I think the gesturing was probably what highlights the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not going to help Roden that he was just stood doing nothing.
Yeah,
but McBurney's throwing up signs. That's not going to help Roden at all.
Jordan Ayew was there as well, and Courtney Baker Richardson were also in the away end. Obviously, Jordan Ayew is not a Swansea player anymore, but he's there to see Andre.
Mm.
Both of them went largely under the radar, and it just so happens that McBurney's sort of been picked up because of his actions, and that's sort of shone a light on it. Because I mean, I've been to a load of games where you do catch the odd play. You know, I've seen Ali Al Habsi in the home end at Cardiff once, just you know, random things like that.
It all comes about being dignified,
exactly.
But I think the difference in this case that Blakey's making with Roden, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but I do get it. The difference with all those examples you've mentioned, is that Joe Roden also plays at that ground for Wales. I think that's the point Blakey's making, I can totally get him being, because he's a Swansea player, I get that, but, you know, Blakey's maybe just think about it in a little bit of a different way.
Because some fans will, you'll be guilty by association.
We had that with Ash, didn't we?
I can tell you the game. It was Wales. Well, I mean, Ash had it quite a bit in the early days, but I remember in that ground for Wales Scotland 3-0 to Wales. I remember it to this day that the Wales sub got booed. That was Joe Allen when he came on, and the Scotland sub got cheered. That was Ross McCormack when he came on. That's fact. I remember that to this day. Yeah. That's since said, of course, Joe Allen has become a bit of an idol to everybody who follows Wales, you know. But, you know, the tribalism is always there.
It took them to go to the semi-final of the last Euros for those players who had affiliation to Swansea for it to all be washed away.
But even after that, because there was a game during the recent qualifiers, there was one game at the Cardiff City Stadium, I think, when Ash was walking in, he had he seen a picture of someone doing the Ayatollah, and he sort of...
Oh, that's right. Wasn't he dismissive or
disrespectful? It got caught on camera, and then it kicked up this whole fuss again of, you know, there was Cardiff fans, you know, saying, you know, he's not my captain, and a lot of people denouncing him as English born, and we sort of had all that.
All I say is just
thrown up again.
Just, I don't think they'd be going shopping in Cardiff anytime soon. You, any of those boys? Supposed to be. I don't think they'll be going shopping in Cardiff.
Ollie lives up in Sheffield now.
Yeah, I mean, what you got to think yourself is, fans have long memories, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? It might not come back and haunt you today. It might be 20 years from now when you've, you know, forgotten it even happened or forgotten, and you've been retired a long time. You know, just you know, have a bit more thought to it. That's what I would say. Give it a bit more thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, what are your final thoughts then on the South Coast Derby antics off the pitch aside?
Antics off the pitch aside. I thought, it was the odds were stacked against Cardiff. I think. I don't think Swansea had anything to lose. I don't think once you win your home game, pressure's off.
Yeah.
You can come here. I was actually surprised.
Yeah, were you surprised that they didn't go at it?
Swansea didn't go at it. I just thought, even if you lose the game 1-0, 2-1, 3-0, it doesn't matter. You've both won your home game. That's the way it is, but this is your chance to create history. And it was, for some reason, it had been talked about a lot this first time, you know, someone doing the double over the other team, and Steve Cooper being, you know, his father being a big Cardiffite, and I just thought all these things were aligning. This is going to be their first time, or this is going to be it. They're going to double us, right? I honestly thought so. I predicted we'd win 2-0 because I was in that, trying to get in that zone where when you play that, you know, you will not be defeated. So it didn't come to fruition. I couldn't quite lay it out there enough.
But well, they weren't defeated. So,
I suppose it worked in a way. Ben, I suppose that telepathy power still, you know, just sending out.
My views on it, Ben, were that it just demonstrated what an epic derby this is. And it amplifies to me why this quirky record, and I'd be interested to know if this exists in any other derby fixture in world football, why this quirky record of the double never being done.
So let me exists. Just get it right, never ever.
Ever. The league
never
double
been
has
done.
Never ever been
the
done.
League double, that
and you,
is.
And you
incredible.
You mentioned the build up, a lot of it was mentioned for this one, Blakey. But because of that, you could just see why it's not done. There is no way on earth, having lost that first game, that Cardiff City were going to lose this game. You could just see it. And so if you rewind that for previous games, perhaps you can begin to see why.
Yeah.
You know, once you've lost a game, you know you cannot, by hook or by crook, you are not losing that next game, you know? Mm. And I guess you saw...
I think my first Swansea Cardiff derby was down there. I think we went 1-0 up and might have lost 2-1, I think.
Yeah.
And then we had to play him again couple of days later in the cup,
right
down there,
yeah,
and we beat them. I think it was like 2
I think,
or 3-0.
I think there've been league wins and cup wins.
Yeah, but
Welsh cup
I'm
wins,
saying like when is two
not
games
league.
In a season?
Yeah,
and this was like, you know, days this was fun, obviously 3 games, but because it was all in such close proximity, both at the Vetch.
Yeah,
and we lost the first one and won the second one. But yeah, there's something to be said that.
So even when one team is superior to the others in terms of the playing personnel, and perhaps the best example of that is the Premier League year when Swansea clearly had a much better team on paper. But even then,
3-0 first game, was it?
No, it was 1-0 to Cardiff the first game. Even then, there's no way that double was being done. And it wasn't. Yeah, it was on as even. Mm-hmm. You know, one win apiece.
Yeah, it'll be first.
Find out next season, unless something happens. Okay, that's the end of part one. When we return, we'll talk a little bit of Carlisle and some January transfers.
Subscribe to The Boot Room on iTunes or listen on walesonline.co.uk.
Okay then, so last night Cardiff secured their progress to the next round of the FA Cup. It wasn't easy, was it? a nice trip to Carlisle for Glenn. I'm sure he's delighted with the journey home as we speak. He's on the train, I believe. 4-3 away to Carlisle, and next round of the cup.
I think that's all that you can ask for, really. In those circumstances, even if we were like a tremendous Liverpool sort of Man City footballing team, it's the kind of fixture that, because you didn't do the job at home, and sometimes that happens, especially in the cup, it happens every year, there's always slip-ups, you have to go away, you don't fancy that, but you got to think of the emotional drain that the derby would have taken on the players, not just the physical, but the emotional, because whether you like it or not, the tension builds straight after the game before Swansea, and continues until Sunday evening when you finally start to relax. So to get up and go, 5-hour trip up to Carlisle, I think it was a banana skin waiting to happen, wasn't it? I think a lot of people were looking at that fixture and thinking to themselves, oh, this isn't going to end well for Cardiff, but didn't start well, but ended very well, you have to say, getting the result. I thought that's all that mattered. I seen the goals on highlights, okay, set pieces kind of thing, long throw and stuff like that. I thought McCurdy's second goal, the final goal, when he went down the touchline, quick free kick and bent it, no angle. I thought that was probably the pick of the goals.
But, should Cardiff be disappointed with how they defended that and switched off maybe a little bit?
Probably, Ben, but it is a case of, listen, it's Carlisle.
Yeah, it's 4-2 up, isn't it? 4-2 up away to Carlisle.
It's not about, of course, you still want to carry out certain things, all things correctly. You want to defend well, you want to press the game if you can, you want to keep the ball if you can, you want to do all these things. Cardiff aren't quite that team yet, let's not forget. You know what I mean? And like I said, coming off the back of a major derby, jumping on a coach, going up 5 hours, I thought it was a tremendous result, honestly, to go to 1-0 down as well. And again, good travelling support went up there. I just thought it was a great result. I don't think it's something you look at and go, start pulling apart, he didn't do this and he didn't do that. I just think it's one of those, mate, it's one of another player, done. You're just thinking to yourself, let's get up here, get the game won and get out of that dodge. Let's forget, don't worry about, we should have had more possession on it. Let's just go in, get the dog, just ram raid it.
Got the engine's already running by the time you get up.
Mate, you don't turn off the coach.
Exactly.
You just leave the engine running. Absolutely. So to get out of there unscathed, I thought it was a tremendous result, me personally.
Do you agree with that? Well, you seem to be nodding in agreement.
I think go on and win the FA Cup now. So,
Nice,
I said on a previous podcast after I could see Cardiff going and putting 3 and 4 on them. I didn't think they concede 3, mind, because that's what happened with the Mansfield. Was it Mansfield a couple of years back or something? I could just see it. I can see another draw at Reading in the next round and a replay. And if Cardiff get through that, they're in the fifth round. Then hopefully a big club at Cardiff City Stadium to sort of re-energise and, re-motivate everybody, I suppose, Blakey. So sometimes a cup run. Whereas I know Warnock and Malky, certainly in the promotion years, regarded the cups as an absolute bind. I think it could be the sort of thing Cardiff need this season to re-energise everybody, Blakey.
I just think the FA Cup is something that... as kind of... Sometimes in the media, you downplay it. Right, it's not that important, all that, but as a kid, especially, I can only speak for myself in the 80s and that growing up, you played FA Cup, right? One of you's Tottenham, one of you's Man United, one of you's QPR, one of you's, and you played FA Cup, you played knockout, right? You don't score, you're out, and then you all come back in, one keeper.
Do you ever win those games?
I won about 200 FA Cups as a kid, right? But,
Wembley, they're called.
We call them sometimes Wembley, sometimes we'll have a game of FA Cup. But the importance... The
difference is PlayStation today, isn't it?
Yeah, but the importance is huge, I think. And as a player, when you've grown up with that part of because there was no Sky and all that. It was footballs on TV, match of the day, and then the FA Cup was like the biggest thing, you know, come around once a year, cup final. And we had such massive games in those FA Cups in those days. It was like, you know, now any player, once you play in the FA Cup, you know, even if I don't win it, can I write a story in it? Can I be part of history in it? You know what I mean? Because it's what I grew up with. It's so significant. Like, I understand, what's the other cup called?
League Cup.
The League Cup. That, you know, people, you know, tend to utilise squad and things like that. I just think the FA Cup is huge. I used to think the same about the Welsh Cup, though. Even though the Welsh Cup is, you know, nothing compared to the FA Cup in comparison, because there's obviously only a Welsh team. There's a couple of English teams in there as well.
Yeah, I think Hereford won it a few times.
Yeah, but... Yeah, no, not against Cardiff, mate. But, you know, I think it's special to me anyway.
Yeah.
Because it was always special as a kid. You didn't play, oh, let's play league. No, let's play league football. And over the course of the month, let's go around the streets, play in different streets, and whoever's top of the league, we have points and all. You didn't. You played World Cup, FA Cup. That was it. So... For me, it has greater significance, and it means a lot. Really, it does for me. I love the FA Cup. I love the little teams like Maldon and Tiptree, was it, playing when they played Newport, and you know, massive, you know, chance for a cup upset. Newport, and like they play like Leeds or
City, Spurs,
Man City, like. Spurs, Cardiff. You know what I mean? You know, giant, you know, killings. I just love that. I just think that's superb.
It has changed a lot though, because obviously the Premier League and the way the Champions League is played now with all the extra games. But it's funny because I've attended a lot of FA Cup finals in my capacity as a journalist. Yeah, a lot of them with a lot of Welsh interest, and obviously Cardiff were in one as well. But do you know what? If you could throw the majority of the 70s and 80s FA Cup finals at me, I could reel them off chapter and verse. But the more modern ones and the ones that I've attended, I can remember next to nothing about.
Yeah,
it's bizarre, Blakey, isn't it? Because it meant everything back then.
It shouldn't be cyclical. It shouldn't be something that... It should always be sacred. That's what I say about the FA Cup, right? Because back in... You know, the 90s when I was playing and United were dominant, there was a time when Man United were talking about not even playing in the FA Cup. It was too much for them, right?
That was the Club World Cup, wasn't it? First year of the Club World Cup.
Right, yeah. Fast forward 30 years, United are hanging on to that FA Cup as their only chance of silverware. Do you know what I mean? So it becomes cyclical for Manchester United. Right, yep. It's sacred, really, you know, because as much as you might not, some teams might look at it and go, now, trust me, there'll come a time where your manager will want that cup more than anything. It'll mean the world to you as the fan, and it'll mean the world to the club and the manager and the players. So, you know, don't slip on it. Don't sleep on it. It's as important. It sits alongside, right, who won the league, who won the cup?
Yeah.
Right, they're kind of like, yeah, the league is your bread and butter, and the cup are one-off games. So the excitement is the same when you're at the game, but it differs. You know what I mean? Because I know tomorrow, right, we lost today, but Tuesday night we play, and I can get 3 points, and I can, you know, and we've still got a 6-point gap. And the FA Cup, you play a game, you lose, you're out. Simple as that.
Yeah.
And I love that. I just think the FA should do a lot more to push the FA Cup, and I think clubs should do a lot more to push the FA Cup. I think what Liverpool done this year, I think World Club and the Cup plus the league, okay, they had to field a lesser team, but they still took it serious, won the game. Everton won it?
Everton,
a couple of days ago?
Yeah.
Right, so, you know, but that's because commitment was everywhere. Liverpool was spread so thinly, they had to. But they took them all totally serious, and they've got through that one. That's why Everton are up in arms, I suppose. But they get through, They win the World Club and they're top of the league flying. I think, you know, tilt my cap, mate.
Definitely. I'd agree with that. That's the FA Cup put to bed. Let's talk transfers. It's been a fairly quiet January so far, hasn't it? I guess the two main stories are Neil Edridge's future and Kiefer Moore, and both look fairly resolved now, don't they, Abel?
I don't know about Etheridge. We'll have to see on that one. I mean, obviously Medina's gone.
Has he signed for anyone yet, Gary?
Not sure.
All the best to him.
Somebody told me yesterday he had done in league, but
didn't anyway. Work out for him here. But all the best to him. Strikers Union and all that. Benjamin,
It's not about who goes out. Actually, it's who comes in that kind of fans are interested in. So they've been in for Kiefer Moore, Wales striker. They put in a £2.3 million bid. I'm told that is way Wigan value him. £3 million more than that, and so
£3 million would be £6 million.
There or thereabouts. You work the maths out.
Okay.
I think the valuations are so far apart.
I blame you for that.
So far apart that they've why? Because of what he's done for Wales.
Yeah, I blame you for putting that because I know that the Mr. Dalman and Mr. Chu and what have you listened to this podcast and you put that out there. So I blame you. Not that I wouldn't want Kiefer at the club or anything like that. I just think we need to go in a different direction. And I think, you know, if you're moving to what I believe most majority of Cardiff fans want the club to move towards and the philosophy they want to see set out, because they paid to watch this entertainment every week, let's not forget. And money's too tight to mention these days, right? I believe that Kiefer, as great as he's been for Wales, I don't think he's right for Cardiff. I don't think he gets you 20 goals in the Championship.
If he wasn't Welsh, would Cardiff be interested in signing him?
No.
There's your answer.
Simple as that. No. That's what I said, I blame him. Right over there.
No. The one you can blame me for is Wigan's £6 million valuation, because we're the ones who've been writing up how fantastic he has been for Wales, and he has been fantastic
for Wales.
He's been incredibly good. Mm. The other one that they're supposedly in for is Gregory of Stoke, who was with Harris at Millwall. That one enthused me far less than Kiefer Moore, to be honest with you. But of course the Etheridge situation is interesting because, I'm told that West Ham have put a concrete offer on the table for Etheridge. You know, it depends on who you're talking to, what you wish to believe, or
any rumors
blah, blah, blah.
On the figure?
Is that off the table now, considering they signed Darren Randall?
I think so, yeah, because I think Cardiff were holding out for a little bit more.
How much did they put down? Do you not have any idea?
Well,
figures?
Again, I think you're looking at similar to the Moore figures, you know? So
what, £6 million?
So
come on, man! Stop being so slim shady.
So you've got
the fans a little bit of direction.
So you've got this.
No, I'm not letting you go up because I don't know what the price is. You can ask me my opinion in a minute. I don't know. At least give me like.
Do you regard Neil Etheridge as a £6 million player?
Oh, so it's £6 million.
No, I'm just asking you that question. Do you?
See, he's stitching me up. See.
But it is an interesting dynamic, Blakey, because. Yeah. Etheridge was dropped for the Derby game. Now that was a bold call by Neil Harris, as was the Flint decision, right? Dropped £6 million defender. That was absolutely the right decision, Flint. Etheridge, I told you, didn't I? I can tell you a little story here, Ben. I actually rang Blakey I was walking to the ground, so it was before the teams were announced, and I said, I don't know if you've got the team sheet yet, but I'm hearing both Etheridge and Flint have been dropped, yeah?
You did, yeah.
And I remember saying, I was told last night, but I was told I couldn't put anything out publicly on it because, in inverted commas, we don't want the Jacks to know, was the way it was worded to me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, look, if I'm told something in confidence, I'm told something in confidence. I could understand the Flint thing. I found it hard to believe that Etheridge would be dropped, but crikey, he was. Now, I remember thinking, I think I said this to you, Blakey, I can only put it down to the fact that they conceded six at Millwall, and maybe he was partly to blame for that.
I heard Neil Harris mention that, as far as Harris was going.
And it was a bold call, but Smithies, I thought, did very well against Swansea. I know he didn't have much to do, but
He's a good keeper.
I'll tell you now.
Swansea
appeared to have a real chance early on. I thought he made a fantastic save with his legs. Now, it subsequently was ruled out offside, but he wasn't to know that at the time. Yeah, and I looked at that and I thought, oh crikey, you've got something about you. You know, his distribution was much superior to anything we've seen from Etheridge. I think we knew that would be the case. I don't think he's got Etheridge's stature. I don't like the way he lets the ball come across the six-yard box too much without coming in, claiming it or punching it away.
Paul used to be a goalkeeper, by the way. But he's still the media Wales goalkeeper.
But if Etheridge is not going, Cardiff have lost potential for a substantial transfer fee there. And obviously you've got a situation where only one of them can play.
Yeah.
And it looks like Etheridge, who was the Premier League goalkeeper.
Is his contract up this season?
No, I don't think it is. He's now out of favour.
Well, it didn't help, I don't think, when Neil Harris publicly says, well, you know, keeper conceded six goals at QPR. I was like, whoa. But I think he's then kind of gambling on the fact that Etheridge is probably going to be gone by the end of January. Now, if it doesn't happen that way, you're going to have an upset, very unhappy keeper or player, should I say, on your hands. And
well, it's up to him to manage that situation now,
well,
isn't it?
You have to now.
You know?
You have to, but you've got to think to yourself, you know, players, they can be sensitive. You know, effectively, what you've done is just dug him out for the 6-1 defeat at QPR. You haven't mentioned anyone else. You know, we dropped Sol, so we thought, and then Sol's back in fold. We dropped Etheridge a game after. You know, so it's, and then say, openly say publicly, oh, well, you know, six goals, blah, 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 blah. Mate, if that was me, I'd be fuming.
So, but irrespective of what happens for Etheridge, I think the bigger issue for the fans is who comes in the door. And at the moment, as we speak, at this moment in time, there's no sign of anybody.
I don't think it is, mate. I think you've got to start to look at this and stop always thinking every transfer window, January, summer, who are we spending money on? Oh, it's unrealistic, mate. If you're gonna build a club, successfully build a club, right? First and foremost, cut away what you don't need, right? Cut away what you don't need.
Well, that's what they're starting to do, to be fair.
Some of those players might be causing you a problem in other ways, not just financially, that you've got money going out that you get nothing for, but also within the dressing room. So you have to, Neil Harris has now got to create a new club, a new set of captains, a new set of leaders, build a new dressing room. You know, these are things that you don't really think about, but it's really important because the new manager has a different set of favourites to the old manager. That's just stands to reason, right? So now you've got to rebuild the dressing room how you want it to focus, how you want it to be, how you want it to react, how you want it, you want it to take on part of your personality and how you are. And that's a really, really difficult skill, right? For any man, especially when you're managing a team that's had success in promotion, had a year in the Premier League, somewhere where that you, they can say, have never been, either as a player or as a manager. So I'm just giving you kind of insight into a player's mind, what players say in the dressing room. So that situation is now going to have to be managed really, really closely. But how you manage Etheridge, I think if you have accepted that he's going to go, I think when the statement that he's made, I would probably say to him, listen, I didn't mean nothing by it, right? It was just like a figure of speech. I thought you were going and I was trying to make reason for why we were letting you go rather than, you know, but you're still in my plans, blah, blah, blah. He's going to have to do something to rebuild that situation,
yeah,
definitely.
But going back to the bigger picture, though, which is, you know, I do think fans want to see some incomings, though I take the point that you're making, or I think I'm going to come on to that in a minute, but it's quite obvious that team needs a, and it was made blatantly obvious again at the weekend, Blake, that needs a fast, team needs more pace in it. They need a fast, creative winger. They need a striker and they need a midfielder, in my opinion. But irrespective of that, you mentioned Harris has not been at a club of this stature, this level before, yeah? Yeah. Part of me thinks that he's come in, he's inherited a bumper squad and he must think it's like a kid in a candy store here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've got an incredible squad compared to what I had at Millwall type thing. And maybe that's making him hesitate in terms of, well, do we strengthen, you know, do we get player X, Y,
you know? If I'm Neil Harris and I'm looking at my squad at the moment, right?
Look at the team he was able to put out at Carlisle. Yeah. A second string team that had Bamba in it and a £6 million flint in it.
The squad is huge.
It had Joe Rowles in it.
That's what we know.
It had Danny Ward in it. Patton had Josh Murphy in it. That's not a bad team, is it?
The squad is huge. But, you know, that it comes with several problems. That then denies 23 players and 18 players any sort of opportunity to get past that amount of players and get into first team contention. That's one problem. Number two, if you're going to play, which I think we're going to play, he wants to play one striker and two either side of three, your centre-backs have to be able to defend one-on-one. You're holding midfield. I think at the moment, we always play with two and one ahead. That can change. You can have one holding and two ahead, or one holding, one box-to-box in, and one in the 10 position, right? But the most striking thing for me, and this, as you know, I love Peltier, right? It's not a go at the fullbacks, but if you're playing that two centre-halves, two fullbacks, two holders, basically you've got a box four already, right? You've got your two centre-halves and your two holders. I'm telling you, we need high tempo, quick, getting forward, attacking fullbacks is what you need, right? Because your front three and your midfield three, basically your two fullbacks become your wingers and your two wingmen become wing stroke strikers, right? So they're moving across lines at the top three, right? Hence why when you look at someone like Leicester now, right, and Man City and Liverpool, their fullbacks are so important, right? And I think that is something that we keep overlooking. We keep going, oh, we need a striker. Oh, we need... Well, Glatzel's a £15 million player. He will get 10 to 15 goals comfortably over the course of a season. Could he get 20? Well, put the right personnel in the right places, right? And it gives him it makes Danny Ward look like a different player. At the moment, there's so much emphasis placed on Tomlin now to create everything sort of thing. And you might get a flash from Mendes, you might get a flash from Højlund, you might get a flash from Glatzel, but it's too much emphasis on one player. Can you imagine him there knowing that I've not only got options of my striker and my winger, but I've got options normally. I've got these flying
fullbacks. So you're saying here that what is perceived as Cardiff's very strength, which is their back four, could actually be perceived as their weakness. And those are the areas that need to be...
Because effectively, Paul,
and that's where the
if
change
you look
needs...
at your two centre-halves and your two, your Bakuna and Pack in front of them, and you've got fullbacks who don't fly forward, you basically got a back seven.
Yeah. Well,
right?
I mean,
so you've got a back seven.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, Joe Bennett can definitely do that. So
we've been saying that for like three seasons.
I know, but Blakey, a lot of it is mindset, isn't it? Right? A lot of this is the mindset that they're
in. It's coaching,
a lot of the team was set up, we've discussed this before, it was set up too negatively at the start of this season and for a long period to compensate for the lack of pace in the centre of defence. Mm. Fair play to Harris. He's dealt with part of that. Mm. But it's still there to a degree. I don't know. It's interesting because we don't look at that. We think, oh, that defence is fine. But you're arguing, oh, the defence should be restructured.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm telling you, it's one of the major reasons why strikers don't score goals here. Right? Because the way the game has changed, and a lot of teams set up either with a back three, which slips into a back five, or they play similar to us, this box four, right? Two centre halves, two holding in front, or two centre halves, one holding in front. So we also have a triangle three or a box four, either or. But that diamond of three or that box of four allows your, because your two centre halves spread and become
it's fascinating insight, and
it's something that we keep overlooking, right? And I even think managers, honestly, I think Neil Warnock come and was just this last 12 months, he was just signing players, and that's what I kept saying, but there's no plan, there's no pattern to what you're trying. I know football as well as Neil. He might have 30 years on me, but mate, I played in places you could only dream of, right? So the balance is a 50-50. No, it's not a diss. He's managing places I could never dream of, right? Well, I've never managed. It's not a diss at all. What I'm saying is, there's not, he's got more experience than you in football because he's a manager. Well, there's no more better experience than being a player.
So it's interesting.
He carries out.
Yeah, it's interesting because in my mind, as you speak and you mention these tactics, I'm thinking of Robertson getting to that byline for Liverpool and Trent Alexander-Arnold doing the same. And I know it's a silly analogy because these are world class players potentially. Yeah, but
Robinson look where he signed from.
Yeah, Hull. But you're right. The principle of his right. And then I think about the static nature of which how Cardiff are potentially going down the right in particular.
The situation, right? And
it's all slow, which is
absolutely poor. And there's a situation on Sunday, and I don't know if any fans can remember it, but it stuck out to me. We done a little passing move in a triangle, right? And it involved, I can't remember three players. I know
it must have been Tomlin, one of them,
right? And there was a kind of a little ripple of round of applause and from the crowd. And then I think it was Junior tried to slip a ball through and put it out for a goal kick. I'm sure it was second half, if my memory serves me correctly. And I just thought to myself, I'm sat there thinking, you see that? Three passes and we can't complete the fourth. That is kind of the way our team is, right? But just listen to the fans. They're so desperate to see some quality football where you see 9, 12, 15 passes slip and cut through you. Or 3-4 passes and Lang, burning down the right hand side, whipping it in, and Glatzel finishing. I honestly think, and I can't speak for all Cardiff fans, but from my own personal feeling and the feeling I get from them, and when I speak to, because I speak to a lot of fans nowadays, right? I met a guy in Morrison's petrol station yesterday. He's like, I haven't seen you since the 80s. I was like, yeah. He's like, I've been great now, Blake. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to get some Grecian now. We just cracking up laughing. But they haven't seen, I don't think, what I deem as, and what they would deem as fast attacking, how Cardiff used to play free-flowing football. I don't think they've seen it for a long time. And the evidence for me is, last time you had a 20-goal striker.
But with respect, Blake, your little triangle is the most basic fundamental passing move that anybody can do at any level of football, Blake.
You think it is? It is easy.
It's fundamental.
But if it's not what you've been doing for the last 3.5 years, everything's muscle memory, right?
I feel like we're going to head down a path that we've head down on this podcast many times. Yeah. So let's take a break and then we'll Ask Blakey.
Yes, Ben.
And predictions.
Subscribe to The Boot Room on iTunes or listen on walesonline.co.uk.
Okay, time for a bit of Ask Blakey. We got a load of questions, so we'll race through them pretty quickly.
Ask Blakey about that shirt you got on.
That's a great shirt. I don't know what more you want to ask. Yeah.
Can I borrow it?
Yeah, ask where I got it from. You can have it, yeah. First one comes from Josh Good on Facebook.
Hello, Josh.
Um, He asks, what do you make of Danny Gabbadon, Ewan Robertson, Ellis, James on the...
Oh, is this them forgetting about me or something like that?
Forgetting about you. Yeah. They did a quiz on their podcast, didn't they? Top 15 Welsh goal scorers in the Premier League. And they forgot that Nathan Blake was in the top 15.
What off a duck, Josh. what off a duck's back, Josh. I always say, listen to me. They're colleagues of mine. What's important to me is fans, honestly. There was a Cardiff fan wrote to me once and asked me if I would turn up for his birthday. That was a couple of seasons ago, and he was like 80 odd, I think it was his 80th birthday. He was having a birthday, and I turned up to say hello. I was passing one evening, and I was coming from a game, so I just popped in to say hello. I've had fans say to me, you know, goals that I've scored has been their best moment ever at the stadium. Listen, what matters to me is fans' memories.
Has there been a fuss kicked up about this on social media then? I think
they're probably more gutted that they didn't get 15 out of 15 on the quiz.
Listen, what number was Blake?
12, 13,
didn't
you? You're decent.
I think I'm a bit higher than that, maybe. I haven't got a clue.
I did the quiz.
So who's number one on that list?
It would be Giggs.
Giggs,
then Speed.
Yeah.
Bellamy. Giggs,
he sports goals every year, didn't he? He scored over 100 goals.
So. Yeah.
Dean Saunders is on that list.
He's on that list.
But
just saying, I got 15 out of 15 when I did the quiz.
Oh, well, congratulations, because I probably
Michael Owen in that list.
I probably would have got six. But does it bother me? Absolutely not.
Next question.
What matters most is fans' memories. That's, you know, they're just pundits, mate. On a bang average podcast, by the way, even though it's pushed by the big boys.
Jeff J. Cheshire asks on Facebook.
I've got to get a little payback. You give me that, will you?
Why can Swansea get loan players from top clubs and City never seem to be considered?
Listen, I won't name any names. What I'll say to you is, remember when we couldn't get, I think it was Gruwich back, and the previous manager was, you know, having a pop at, I think it was Chelsea at the time and Liverpool at the time. Listen, if you burn bridges, mate, it takes a long time to rebuild them.
I guess it's...
And, you know, at the end of the day, the game has changed from how we as a club were functioning. And like, these are things behind the scenes which people say they don't see, so they don't get to have an opinion or understand. But I get to hear a lot, right? And there's, you know, the game has changed. You can't just go knocking on the door and say, give us that player because he's not playing and we'll take him on loan. Oh, we'll pay his wages or blah, 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 blah. There's things attached now, like, you know, you're going to have to pay a loan fee for that player, right? Rightly or wrongly. Now, on top of that, we're going to say he's got to pay 70... We're going to say, if you want him, he's got to play 75% of games between now and the end of the season. Yep. Otherwise, what's the point in taking him? Because we've seen managers here sign players that are never to be seen and never play, right? Sat on the bench or sat at home on a Saturday. So when you're dealing with these top clubs, you have to deal correctly. You have to come correct. Remember, I'm asking you for a favour. Right? You're not... They're not coming to Cardiff and saying... Liverpool don't say, oh, can we loan... can we loan Bobby Reid for the season? Or can we loan Callum Patterson? If they are, they're going to come with a certain decorum and say, right, this is how we act, this is what we do, this is a process, blah, 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 blah. And I think it's these things that show Cardiff's inexperience in football, right? And that's why, bless you, that's, I would say, at the hierarchy, but at the previous management structure, you're acting as you used to maybe 10 years ago, and times have changed. And because you don't get what you want, don't go then publicly slate, because after you leave this club, maybe Neil Harris is going to go to Chelsea and ask for a favour. What do you think Chelsea are going to say? Do you understand what I mean? I always say it's the club. It doesn't belong to any individual. You know, remember, you're representing the club. So there's a certain way to act, a certain professionalism that's going to have to be carried out. These clubs are connected all over the world. They've got fans all over the world. I mean, we got fans all over the world, but not to the degree of a Liverpool or a Chelsea or a Man United or, you know, we've not got that. But we want to try and get to that. So when you're dealing with people, you know, come correct.
My view very quickly on that, Ben, would be that Cardiff are in a very different... These are kids, remember, that Swansea are signing, and I don't think those are the sort of players Cardiff need at the moment. And if they do, I would much rather they bring through their own kids, from Welsh kids from the Cardiff Academy, than go and sign...
Chelsea got about players. 6 or 7 fantastic kids now playing in their first team. We're out on loan last year. Mm. That's the point, right? So I agree with Paul, but... No, respectfully disagree at a certain point, because I do believe, well, I made the point right from the get go, if you've got all these players, cut back first, which allows your own trees to grow, right? Cut back all the net, all the bush and all that, get rid of the players you don't want before we start going signing another load of players, because who's to say there isn't a rough diamond in the 23s?
Exactly.
Who's to say there isn't a rough diamond in the 18s?
Exactly.
Right, so, you know,
there are.
And I believe
Bellamy assures me there are.
Yeah.
And when Bellamy talks about talent...
We all got to listen!
We do, because, you know, when he raves about a player, you know. Anyway, let's move on to the next question.
I was going
to
say, is another part of the loan stuff that maybe tactically, like Cardiff aren't...
Well, if you're not playing that football...
Like, you know, you look at how Chelsea and Liverpool play. Like, say, listen, if sending a kid to Swansea where he's going to get a championship...
So this is what great point, right, Ben? Because it's in parallel with what I say. What's the point in putting a player who's at Cardiff, no disrespect, down at Barry?
Yeah.
It's too far away from where you want him to be, right? Now, if you're at Newport, send him to Barry... You might think, oh, it's okay, but how good is that league? You're asking that player, he's not going on loan to play for the... He's going on loan to develop.
Yeah.
Just keep that in mind, right? So if I'm down in the lower reaches of football, whatever league, right? English, Welsh, whatever. If I'm down in the lowest reaches of football here, and the boys who play football know this, some of the crazy tackles that still go on, the refereeing decisions, you know, sometimes linesmen, they don't have linesmen. The pitches are cut like they ain't cut. They're like a cow field back in the day. Now, how, if academy kid has come from Cardiff playing on the top surface week in, week out, then you're going to ask him to go down to that level. How is he going to learn something that's going to have a good effect on him when he gets back here at championship level? It does my head in. It's no thought process, mate. There's no thought process. Yeah,
I'd agree with that. Next question, Joshua Watson.
Hi, Joshua.
Fancy coming out of retirement and starting up front?
I get my Timberlands on, because that's about the only boots I'll be wearing. Not for me, Josh. I had my time, mate, and time moves on.
There we go. Michael Darch.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, he says that one of the biggest problem areas is central midfield at the minute. And it's highlighted how important Joe Rawls is to the team. With Rawls coming back in, does Blakey think that will fix it, or do we need to get another central midfielder in? And if so, what type of central midfielder?
I said before we needed a Barry sort of Bannon type of connector. Help you tick, right? They help you pass. The best example I can give fans of history, the best ticker for Cardiff I've seen over the last 10 years has been Stevie McPhail, right?
Yeah.
Some Cardiff fans liked him, some loathed him, but I'm telling you, as a player, as a centre forward, that tick, tick, tick round the corner to the centre forward, I would have loved to play with him, right? Because he gets the team playing football. Cardiff need that type of player. For me, I don't think they have enough people who want to keep hold of the ball. However, I do think Bakuna's done very well for Cardiff. I think he's been one of our strongest players this season, and I think Marlon's done pretty well. I just think it's this trio now with them two and Tomlin. It's fairly new, it's fairly fresh, it's going to take time to develop, but I do think you can't, personally I wouldn't be going
away to Barnsley, and no disrespect to Barnsley, but I wouldn't be going to the lower reaches of the Championship and playing two holding midfielders.
Yeah.
I believe attack is best form of defence. And, you know, if I'm going to Leeds, maybe I try and shore it up a bit more. But I'm going with either a box-to-box eight, or I'm going with someone who's playing advanced, of who's able to support Tomlin and what have you, what have you. But, yeah, that's my opinion.
Okay, probably got time for one more question. Ellis Hearn says, with Mendes...
Tommy Hearns, man.
Ellis out, Mendes out for the rest of the season. Do we think we'll get the best out of Josh Murphy? He looked brilliant when he came on against Swansea.
I don't know, mate. Honestly. Scored,
took a nice goal.
Yeah, nice finish last night. I don't know. The Murphy question just keeps, you know, it's like a... It's like Haley's comment, man. It just comes every week instead of every 70 years. It just keeps coming around. It's for Josh. He's yeah. going to have to step up and do something.
Those Chelsea transfer rumours seem a long time ago, don't they?
Well, that's it. And we've all seen what he's capable of.
Yeah.
It's just consistency. Simple as that. And there seemed to be a problem with the previous manager, right? And I can understand that. I've said a few times, you know, I think if he got a bit more aggressive in the way he is, I think that would help him. But if it's not in his personality, he can't do it. It's as simple as that. So you have to find different ways of trying to get the best out of him, trying to get him to play up to his potential regularly. Now, that's a skill in itself for Neil Harris. You know, the easy thing to do is sideline them.
Yeah.
Right? That's the easy thing to do. The hardest thing to do is get this player to his full potential. Because at his full potential, yes, Cardiff could then have a push on reaching the top six. Right? At his full potential. But then it's not just Josh Murphy at his full potential. Okay, Mendes is out, but can I get Max out of him? If not Max in these players, Junior, Glatzel, Tomlin, if I'm not getting 10 out of 10 out of them, which realistically I'm not over the course of a season, I want an average of a 7 to 7.5, and I want 8, 9 and 10 performances at least 12 games in a season. Maybe 15, so a third of the season I need like off the chart games. As a coach, that's my job. Now, that's not just about coaching, that's about personalities, that's about, you know, maybe the team has been training and today as a surprise we're gonna just, I don't know, go karting or do something different or go for a meal. But I always say the what I learned, especially from Colin Todd at Bolton, was how to build partnerships within the team. Yeah, so the two centre backs, Jerry Taggart, Chris Fairclough, oh, I love those guys, room together. You know what I mean? The left back, the left winger, room together. The right back, right wing, room together. The two central midfielders, the two centre forwards. You know, there was one or two, like, but he literally tried to partner everybody with their partners who they play mostly with. And what it done, and then do things like, we all used to eat together every Wednesday, regardless if there was a game on a Tuesday or whatever, we'd all go out, different restaurant, and we'd all sit, the coach would take us, we'd all, and you really got a family feeling, a togetherness, where you start conversating with boys who were in the team who you've never had a conversation with, really. And over the course of time, you really get to know not just six or seven who you hang about with, you get to know everybody, and everybody knows everybody. And it bodes for such a good dressing room. And I would say that is a skill, and that is something that Neil Harris, if he can achieve, when people say, oh, you know, Cardiff can still make the playoffs, I always go, nah, because I realise there's certain skills that it's nothing to do with football to get the best out of this squad of players. You know, there's other things I've got to do behind the scenes as a man, first and foremost, to knit this all together, to get these believing in one thing, to get, like, this, my centre forward will attack this,
you know,
yeah,
their centre forward if he's kicked my centre half. You know, that's, you know, that notion of one in all in sort of thing. We're all in this together. I mean, people say it a lot and say we're together a lot, but the truth is you'll find those successful teams do it greater and better than anyone else. That's why they're at the top.
There's a simple answer here to it. Well, there's a simple part of a very complicated scenario here, and that is that Blakey said right at the start of this podcast about the lack of creativity in the final third, yeah, which we've seen for a long time, yeah. The truth is that Josh Murphy is a much better player than any of the other wingers at the club. He has got the talent. He's got the pace, which is missing. He's got the ability to go past players because of that pace, and he has a ferocious shot and he can score goals. So if Cardiff are going to charge towards the top six, Josh Murphy's the man who can help them, as a wide player, help them charge there. That's the simple bit.
Yep.
The complicated bit is the personality stroke management of that individual to drag that talent out of that player on a consistent basis.
Yeah. Bring back Eddie May and just do what he done to me and just threaten me. You don't do that, Blakey. I swear to God. Nice show. Yeah. All right, Ed.
All right, then. I think it's time to put next on the line. Make some predictions for the weekend.
Start with Paul, mate. I haven't got a clue what you're talking about. Yeah, go on, mate.
Cardiff are in this position. It's Birmingham away. Cardiff are in this position where they're hard to beat, but they don't win because of this lack of creativity in the final third. And so it's probably got 1-1 written all over it. I don't think Cardiff will lose this game, actually.
No, we never do have a Birmingham.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him sneak a 2-1 win even, but I'll stay 1-1.
Yeah, I'll go... I think someone like Birmingham is this kind of team that Cardiff can go and get 3 points. Worst case scenario, they're getting out there with a draw, I think. So I'm going to go with should I go draw or win? It's two draws away from home. Like London Bus, isn't it? Two wins away from home. Wait for 1-2 come along. I'm going to go with 2-1 win. I was going to say 2-2, but I'm going to go 2-1 win Cardiff, yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Ben?
You're trying to get out of jail there.
Yeah. I took Birmingham on in great form. Is it 1-6, something like that? They always have a knack of, like, pulling out a 1-0 win.
Always take into account there's, like, the rivalry, big city rivalry. Cardiff, yeah. Birmingham, right?
Like, Birmingham always seem to have a knack of getting something out of Cardiff, like, you know, when they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But I'll go... Because it's there. I'm going to go 1-0 Cardiff. I think they'll just get something. Won't be pretty, but they'll... Yeah, 1-0 Cardiff.
Well, what's the point of that? The preamble to all that is that Birmingham always gets something out of Cardiff, and then he says 1-0 Cardiff. where's the consistency there?
Things have to change eventually, don't they? Something has to turn.
Hey, mate. Every donkey has to win a race sooner or later.
Exactly. So that's it for today's Boot Room. But for all the latest Cardiff City news, you can catch it all on Wales Online.